Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
I'm proud to say, I was thinking about it the other day when I was putting this talk together, that I have lived in Atlanta now for 33 years. I moved here in 1984, which is half of my life, exactly, all but 6 months of it in Midtown. So, you know, I kind of like it here. And though I always tell people I'm from Florida, where I lived for 8 years while I was growing up, the truth is, this is my home. This is what I tell people when I'm away from Atlanta. And just like many of you, over those years, I've seen a lot of changes in Midtown. My wife and I were driving around the West Side yesterday. If you haven't been over there, it's amazing. But it's just happening everywhere inside the perimeter, and a lot going on outside. And most of the things that are happening are good. I mean, we are turning into a world-class city. We have been for a while, but it's only getting better. Personally, I like the theater companies here. I love Actors Express. If you haven't gone there, try them out. I like the restaurants here all over the place. Went to a great new one yesterday called Upbeat on the West Side. Really good. Like that one too. I like the museums. Love the High Museum. I like all the botanical gardens, Chastain Park, Stone Mountain, all the different parks. The Beltline, obviously a great thing, whatever. I've been to a lot of great concerts here, and I love the house I've been in for 10 years, the neighborhood I'm in. I like the people here in Atlanta. But there's one thing about Atlanta that I've tried very hard not to focus on that I don't like, and that is, what do you think? The traffic. Okay, right. Everybody says, yeah. Not just the amount of traffic, you know, though that's definitely a part of it. I don't like it when lanes are closed without notice. I don't like that. I don't like those steel plates that they put over there, especially when they stay for 2 or 3 years in the same spot, okay? I don't like all the speed bumps popping up everywhere around my neighborhood. Seems to be a new, they're having babies, you know, they seem to be new ones all over the place. And I really hate it when traffic stops for 15 or 20 minutes on the connector for no apparent reason, okay? Absolutely no reason, okay? Now, I realize, of course, because someone is out there thinking it, I'm not sounding very spiritual about this, okay? I know that I create my personal experience and that I attract to me more of the things that I think about, okay? I know all that. I've been taking these classes and everything for 30-some years, okay? But it still makes me a little crazy. Remember this spring what happened with I-85 when that little section just sort of plopped down? Well, most of those cars ended up coming through my neighborhood, my little neighborhood. We live just a little bit south, about a quarter mile away, as the crow flies. And that kind of pushed me over the edge a little bit, you know, for at least a few days. And I would like to find the guys who fixed that thing in 6 weeks and kiss them all right in the nose. Okay, you know, I was ready to write a check myself. People are saying, should we give him a bonus? I'll give him a bonus myself. Just get the damn thing fixed. Okay, anyway. Now, I also realize that when the city closes streets, okay, to fix the potholes or to fix the drainage system, whatever, they're trying to help, okay? They're trying to make the city better. They're trying to keep the whole city from falling apart by doing maintenance that should have been done years ago. But whenever I sit through a traffic light through 4 or 5 cycles, you know, or I get backed up half a mile in the middle of the day, I get a little cranky. So what I do is I do what I tell my students to do, people in class who are complaining, you know. I try all the solutions I tell them. I put on some music on Sirius. There's some beautiful streaming music you can get, kind of calm, pretty music. I try to look at my time in line as an opportunity to relax and think about all the things in life that I'm grateful for, like my wife and my cat and my house and my friends and all those kind of things. But it doesn't always work as well as I'd like it to. Okay, being perfectly honest. So I've been doing my prayer work to change my consciousness so that either traffic doesn't bother me anymore or I manifest a chauffeur-driven Bentley with Wi-Fi and all that that I could, you know, sit in or relax and go through traffic anyway. But something interesting that I have noticed, okay, my wife's laughing at me out there, is that I am noticeably more patient as a passenger than I am as a driver. I am, because if I'm sitting in the passenger seat, I don't have to make any decisions about where I'm going. If I get in the wrong lane, try to take a shortcut and it gets blocked, whatever, I don't worry about it. I can close my eyes. I can think about the beach or the mountains. I can text my friends in traffic. I can read. I can look at Facebook, look at the stocks on my phone and do all that stuff. I put myself completely in the hands of the person who happens to be driving the car, letting them make all the decisions and letting their decisions determine when I finally get to wherever it is I'm trying to go. And if I'm late, I just blame them. So it's really easy if you're a passenger. Now, as we all know, that's not quite the way it works, especially when we're driving around town. Excuse me. Sorry. Because when we're sitting next to the driver, we both share a little of the responsibility. Okay, we both know how to drive. We both know the area. So we say, yeah, I went that way and it was closed last week or this kind of stuff. We say, what do you think, this way or that way? One of us, usually the passenger, will pull up Waze or everybody use Waze here, really great, or Google Maps, whatever, tells the driver what they see. It's more of a cooperative effort, okay, because we both know what we're doing even if we're not driving at the moment. So it's a shared experience, really. But what about when we are a passenger on an airliner, like I'm going to be tomorrow. I'm flying down to see my 90-year-old mom. Okay, that's a very different experience because then we are really passengering instead of driving, right? It's very, very clear. In fact, even if you know how to fly an airplane, which I do, the thought of asking to drive never comes up when you're sitting in the back, okay? Your whole experience is sitting in the right row and sitting in a line of seats of people leaning back into you, that kind of thing. So once we get on the plane, we don't have a choice except to trust that things are going to be okay. Now, trust is very interesting in this thing. We show up at the airport and we hand our bag to somebody we've never met and we watch it disappear into a tunnel, dark tunnel there, you know, assuming it's going to go to the same place we are. Homeland Security tells us to get in line, take off our shoes, do whatever we need to do, and we trust that that's going to keep us safe. We go to the gate. We wait an hour. We walk down the jetway and walk into this long aluminum tube with wings on the side and 100 of our closest friends or 150, whatever, around us. And in the front of this aluminum tube is a locked compartment with other people that we don't know, who are going to take control of our life for the next couple of hours. That's pretty trusting, don't you think? Okay? My point is, as soon as the door closes and the aircraft starts backing away from the gate, the difference between pilot and passenger becomes very well defined. Very well defined. The pilots are driving and the passengers aren't. And each of them has certain responsibilities. The pilots have to follow all the rules of the FAA. They have to follow the laws of aerodynamics, of course, read their maps, use the flight computer, all that stuff, check the weather, make sure the airplane's working right, all that kind of stuff, and all the while keeping the passengers safe, comfortable, and preferably happy if they can do it. Now, the passengers have nothing to do but to go along for the ride. I used to tell people, if you stay 100 feet, less than 100 feet from behind me, while we're flying, when I was a pilot, you're going to be fine. Okay, if you go outside those parameters, I'm not responsible. Anyway, so the people in the back of the airplane can't see out front. They don't know the weather. They don't have to worry about anything either, unless they want to. And there are a lot of people who do. They can sleep when they want, watch movies, play games, whatever it happens to be. Okay, and most of the time, even though CNN or New York Times tries to tell us otherwise, the pilots, the airplane, the flight attendants, the passengers and the luggage all show up at the same place at the same time, and everything works as advertised. That's the way it normally works. Now, we can even use that as sort of a metaphor. There was a book popular back in the 1960s by a man named Buckminster Fuller. Familiar with him? Genius. If you're not, you need to look him up. Creative genius, fantastic inventor. And he wrote a book called The Operating Manual for Spaceship Earth. And he was talking about the fact that all of us are passengers on this big blue ball that's spinning through space at 17,000 miles a minute, or whatever it happens to be. And when he wrote the book, his intention was to get us all to understand that we are all on this big blue ball together, and we're all responsible, maybe not for where it's going, but for how we get there when we get there, okay? If we're responsible for the state of the planet, we need to learn how to get along with our resources and other people and all these other things, which is a pretty important message. So that's why this morning I want to talk about how we, as individuals and as a race of beings, are choosing to experience our journey. I want to talk about the role that each one of us chooses to play every single day, either consciously or unconsciously, in our own individual lives as we move through this journey that each one of us is creating every day. So my spiritual question for you today is, and for me, because I'm a part of this, is, in your life, are you driving or are you just sitting in the back seat looking out the window or reading the paper? That's the spiritual question, okay? Are you driving this vehicle that you have been given, this mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual vehicle, in the direction you want to go, at the speed that you want to go, and most importantly, in the style that you want to go? Are you doing that? Or are you just along for the ride, which is the title of the talk? Now, there are several reasons I think this is important to talk about. First and foremost, this teaching, the teaching of the science of mind, tells us that we are all individual expressions of the one creative power that there is, okay? Excuse me. It all tells us that we all have the creative power of spirit, hardwired into our DNA. It's a part of who we are. We're all immersed in an intelligent universe that works through very definite laws, and we were all born with the ability to use our mind and our physical body in conjunction with these laws to create the life that we want. Now, Dr. Raymond Charles Barker, who was Louise Hay's teacher and actually my teacher's teacher, so he's sort of my metaphysical grandfather, I guess you'd call him, he says this, I think it's in the book, The Power of Decision. He says, divine intelligence needs your full cooperation to bring to pass your heart's desire. Isn't that great? Let me read that one more time. Divine intelligence needs your full cooperation and my full cooperation to bring to pass our heart's desire. So if we put all of that stuff together, all right, if we expect to achieve a certain result in our life, we need to use the laws, all right, the spiritual laws and the physical laws, to go in the direction we want to go, which may not be the direction that everyone else is going. Okay? Or put it this way, this kind of came into my mind this morning when I was going over it. Being a sleeping passenger on the Race Consciousness Express is probably not going to get us where we want to go. It just isn't, okay? You see, as passengers, we are at the mercy of the people who are making the decisions, whether or not their decisions are good ones. Now, we may like the fact that we can just sit back and we don't have to do any work. We may enjoy being taken care of. A lot of people do in their life. But if the person who's driving makes a mistake or goes the wrong direction or changes their mind, it doesn't matter if we don't like their decision. We're going to go where they go. That's what's going to happen as a passenger, okay? If we allow other people to choose our path to make the decisions, then we have no right to complain where we end up, all right? If we surrender control, their destination becomes our destination. Now, most people in the world have a passenger mentality. They'd rather blame somebody else for the direction their life is going, all right? People who live as passengers spend their entire lives going where other people tell them to go, okay? They never go against the crowd. They never ask questions. They only complain or play the victim card, as Doug was mentioning earlier, that kind of thing. But they don't want to take the personal responsibility. They figure the person in front must know what they're doing or they wouldn't know. Because it's really too bad when they do that, because I can assure you that the view from the front is a lot better, a whole lot better. One example that came to mind, when I worked as a pilot, some of you know this, many of you don't. I was a military and then a commercial pilot for 33 years, long time, for a small local airline whose name rhymes with Schmelta. I won't tell you who it was. And when we were at the gate, waiting, you know, for the flight paperwork and everything, half an hour or so before the flight, we'd invite kids to come up to the cockpit and put them in the seats, in the pilot seats, and put our hats on them. And the parents would be there taking pictures with the cameras. This is before everybody had phones. This is a number of years ago. And the kids would get so excited that sometimes they wouldn't want to leave. It was great. They loved it. They'd go back, you know, and we'd see the pictures later on posted on emails and stuff. But what was really sad was how many children we'd invite them in, and their eyes would get big, and they'd look at all these switches and stuff like that, and they'd go, uh-uh. And their parents would try to push them in, and they'd start crying, or they'd start fighting. They didn't want to come up there because it was something totally different. They were perfectly happy to go straight back to their seat and pull out their Game Boy or their phone, or whatever it happens to be, and watch the movie. And I couldn't help wondering why they were conditioning themselves at an early age to be satisfied in the passenger cabin, like everybody else. Something even more surprising to me was when I first started flying for the airline in the late 70s, the FAA was a lot more lax. This was before 9/11. You know, it tightened up quite a bit afterwards. But at the time, it was very relaxed. And if we didn't have any passengers sitting in first class on a regular flight, we could have one of the flight attendants sit up in the cockpit in what we called the jump seat, which was an extra seat sitting behind the right behind the pilots. We called them stewardesses back then, but these were the flight attendants, okay? So there were always some of the new flight attendants who went, wow, can I? And they'd come and they'd sit there, and we'd take off and fly from Atlanta to Birmingham and land, and they'd never been in the front. They'd never seen it before, and most of them were absolutely fascinated. They loved it. What was really great is when we got to do it at night, because flying an airplane at night is incredible. You see the lights everywhere and the stars and all that. I mean, even Newark looks pretty at night. It's amazing when you're flying, all right, with all the lights. And sometimes when I flew Europe for a number of years back and forth, we'd be coming back from Europe, and because of the jet stream during the winter, we had to go way farther north than normal, and we would go over the southern portion of the continent of Greenland, which I assure you is not green at all. Okay, and we would go over, and if the weather was clear, which it wasn't always, but every so often, it only happened 8 or 10 times for me during the 12 years that I flew to Europe, you would see this incredible continent of ice. You'd see glaciers coming down about 4 or 5 miles below you. We were probably 30, 35,000 feet, and you'd see icebergs breaking off and going off into the ocean, and it was absolutely incredible. It was a sight that probably not even 0.1% of people in the world, far less than that even, would ever get to see. So we'd announce it to the passengers, and they get to look out their little windows, the one on one side, and some of them would go over to the other side and try to see it, and the airplane would tilt like that. Anyway, but we'd go back, and sometimes I'd go back, and the airplane was on autopilot, the other pilot was flying it, and I'd go to the back where it was dark and smelly and all that stuff, you know, and I go to a couple of the flight attendants and say, you guys want to come up to the cockpit and see Greenland? And they'd be reading their People magazine and look up and go, no thanks, and just go back to whatever it was they were doing. Once again, it amazed me. The opportunity to see something that nobody in the world gets to see from this beautiful panoramic view, and they turned it down. You know, now there's nothing wrong with that. Okay, I just don't understand it personally. I mean, how often do we give up an opportunity to see something like that because we don't want to get out of our comfort zone? I was watching it firsthand. You see, the real joy of being in the driver's seat is not being in charge or being in control. The real joy is the freedom we have to choose, the freedom to change our mind, the freedom to be spontaneous, to see something new or different, all right? To see it from up front. I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing things with other people. We're here to do things with other people. We're all here to work together. The point is, we don't need to be in charge of other people, but we do need to be in charge of ourselves. And it's a lot easier to do when you're up front. All right? When we choose our own path, even if somebody else is on it, we can hold hands and walk together, but we're deciding where we go. But if we continue to sit back passively and wait for somebody else to decide where we go, we may not like where we end up. And a lot of people are finding that out in their life. Now, even though some people don't like to hear this, the same thing applies if we are waiting for God to tell us where we're supposed to go. It's basically the same process, because in spite of what some people try to tell us, God is not in the business of telling us where to go or what to do. You know, that's what the sisters tried to tell me at Espiritu Santo Catholic School, but anyway, it wasn't, okay? We pick the where and the what in our life, and God picks the how and the when. We pick the where and the what, and God comes in on the how and the when. You see, Spirit doesn't direct us, it responds to us. That's what Dr. Holmes talks about in The Science of Mind. It's the intelligence that shows up as the different choices we can make when something is happening in our life, okay, after we decide where we want to be. So we choose the destination in our life, and Spirit presents us with a variety of different ways to get there, and we choose. So we drive the bus, and Spirit lights the way. That's kind of the way the process works. Now, if we change our mind in the middle of it and we decide to go in a different direction, this power doesn't say, oh no, this is where we were going, we're going to keep going there until we get there. It will immediately move in front of us to where we want to go, and we go on our way. Okay? So we aren't the power that does the work, just like the driver isn't the car or the pilot isn't the airplane, but we are the ones who choose where we're going. All right? Or as the poet said, William Ernest Hensley, anybody ever hear the poem Invictus? Remember what the last line of that was? I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Very, very powerful poem and a very powerful ending. Now, this is a difficult concept for some people to accept, probably because they were taught as children that God was going to handle everything. Okay, they just needed to be quiet and let it handle. And there's part of us that still thinks, for some of us, that an infinite intelligence can make better decisions in our life than we can. But if you want to see how this power really works, drive around town. Drive around Atlanta. Look at all this building and all this work that's going on. You have this huge machine that can do amazing things. And there's a little compartment there that a driver is sitting in, pushing some buttons, moving some switches, and this huge machine does what it does, which is whatever the pilot, the driver, whoever it is, directs them to do. It tears up concrete, it builds, puts up steel beams, it does all these things. So we tell it what we want, and it helps us to do what we want to do. Now, in much the same way, when we're talking about spirit or we're talking about God, we're talking about a power that is right there where we are, always ready to go. And it never says no, okay? We're not talking about a being that tells us what to do. When we learn, when we finally get the lesson about how to confidently step into our designated place in our life as the director of our life, as the driver of our life, and the decision maker in our life, life will respond by immediately taking us wherever we tell it to go. Because that's what it does. That's what life does. That's what God does, if you want to think it that way. The problem is, it doesn't always look like we're on the right road, which is kind of scary if you're a driver. That's when the trust concept comes in that I was talking about in the beginning. That's when we have to trust the process, because the direction we end up going may not be the direction we thought it was going to be. It may not be. For example, let's say I am ready to move in the direction of a loving, caring relationship with somebody who loves me just the way I am. I've already got that, but let's just hypothetically say, okay, we're doing that. As soon as I begin moving that way in consciousness, the first thing that might happen is some of my previous relationships may fall apart. That didn't look like I thought it was going to look, okay? Or we might find ourselves without a relationship for a little while. For a little longer than we expected. But if we do it right, we don't just throw up our hands and give up. We keep moving. Okay? We keep moving in what appears to be the best direction because we're driving, all right? Because what is happening may be what needs to happen for me to get to where I'm going. Now, it's the same process if I want to create financial independence, let's say, or if I want to create a better, healthier body. As long as I keep my mind focused on the destination, on what I want to create, you know, freedom for financial independence, health and vitality, whatever you want to call it for your health, as soon as I focus on that, I know that Spirit is already supporting me in going there, okay? And I can navigate the twists and turns and the occasional bumps in the road that are a natural part of the journey. And even if the road changes, even if it starts getting darker, okay, or smoother or bumpier, whatever it happens to be, I keep driving. I keep moving forward, all right, because that's my job. I made the decision about where I want to be, and Spirit is giving me the information on how to get there. The philosopher Euripides, I always thought that was a funny name. He was a Greek. 400 BC, made a statement. That sounds like it applies to this. He said, very simply, the wisest men and women follow their own direction. Sounds kind of good, kind of straightforward, sort of self-reliant, like Emerson would talk about. But that statement needs a little bit of clarification to bring this all together. Self-reliance and independent thinking are important, but that doesn't mean that we're doing anything in our life without God. Nothing in our life without God. In fact, we can't do anything without God, without this power, because it's what we are. We're never separated from it. We are actually one with it. It's the intelligence in our mind and the love in our heart that we make that we use to make intelligent, loving decisions. It's the world that we create and the life we create, every single bit of it, through the choices we make. It's the journey that we're on and everyone we meet while we're on that journey, whatever it happens to be. I mean, one thing we know is that we're all headed towards the same place. Wherever that happens to be, we are all heading for the same place. Now, our paths may be different, probably will be. Our schedules are going to be different. Our fellow passengers may be different, and the scenery is most definitely going to be different. But if we follow these rules, we'll find that getting there is going to be a whole lot more fun, because when we exercise our freedom to explore the world along the way, and we're looking out the front window, and we're watching things flow and change, and we're loving it and making the decisions that affect our life, it's a whole lot easier when we're not just along for the ride. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine, and so it is. Thank you, and so it is. All right. Thank you. All right, let's take a moment now. All these words come to us all in different ways. We all hear different things. So take the ideas that resonated with you and set the others aside for later. And let's know this. My life is ahead of me, not behind me. So I look forward. I step forward. I move forward. I keep my eyes open and my heart open, knowing that where I focus my consciousness is where my life is going to go. So I look at the people that are in my life. I look at the things like my job and my home and my partner, my spouse, all these different things, and I realize that they are a part of my journey. And as I am grateful for them and accept them as a part of my life, I still maintain my own direction. I share with others, as each of us shares whatever information we need to make life better for all of us and for everyone everywhere. I respect others. I honor others, even those I don't know, even those I don't agree with. I allow myself to go through life at my own speed, in my own way, comfortable in my own skin, choosing who I love and how I love, choosing what I create and how I create, choosing the body I have, choosing everything in my life, not out of fear or resentment or greed, but out of joy. I allow myself to go in the direction of joy in every part of my life. I allow myself to move forward, to be with people who care for me, to be doing things that honor my creativity and honor the world, to be expressing love in every way I can. As I do this, I give thanks along the way. I give thanks for the lessons I have learned. I give thanks for the wrong turns I made. I give thanks for the bad decisions because they taught me more than the good ones. And as I do this, I embrace the divinity within me. I embrace the presence of God, of Spirit, not as something I have, but as something I am. An individual expression of the one life, the one mind. That is who I am, and I deserve the best. So as I give thanks for all that I have learned, thanks for all that I have been given, and thanks for all that I have yet to give, I embrace these truths for myself, I accept them, and I release this knowing into consciousness, letting it be so for me, now and always. Please join me in saying, and so it is.